Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Kiddushim. This week, we diverge between the parshiot that are read outside of Israel and here in Israel, because outside of Israel, there's the eighth day of Pesach, which we don't celebrate here. So until August, we will have the Parsha 1 week earlier in Israel than outside of Israel. This will give you, if you live outside of Israel, an extra week to study with the help of the podcast. This week is Kiddushim with Rabbi Mishhammer Kassoy. Rabbi Mishhammer Kassoy is a member of the Pardes faculty and also serves as the Pardes Director of Admissions. And now, Rabbi Mishhammer Kassoy.
Thank you, Larry. Wow, this is a big week. We haven't even gotten over Pesach yet. We're into this week. This Thursday is Yom HaShoah. We have 51 mitzvot in this week's Parshat Kedoshim. Next week, on Wednesday, Yom HaZikaron, and on Thursday, Yom HaTzmaut. So much going on with this much in 1 week. I decided just to take a deep breath and to focus on one of the many mitzvot in this week's Parsha, and then see if I could, along the way, connect to the holidays. The mitzvah that I chose to focus on is Lo Ta'amod Al Dam Re'echa. Do not stand idly by your neighbor's blood. What does that mean exactly, positive, practically? It's a negative commandment that you have to do something. You cannot stand silently while someone else is suffering. The Gemara tries to understand what that means practically. Whence do we know that if a man sees his neighbor drowning, mauled by beasts, or attacked by robbers, that he's bound to save him? From the verse, Lo ta'amod al dam re'echa, do not stand idly by the blood of your neighbor. And then the Gemara objects, wait a minute, is that where we get this from? From this verse? Isn't there another verse somewhere else where it says, how do we know that one must save the neighbor from a loss of himself? Because it says, hashevotala, that you should reserve him to himself. So we actually have two verses that say that if you see someone drowning, mauled by beasts, or attacked by robbers, that you have to save him. So how can we, the Gemara is objecting, how can we have both of those things simultaneously, two verses teaching the same thing? You need them both, because had you only had one verse, you would have thought that it's a personal obligation. If I can jump in the river and save you, then I have to. But if I can't, I don't have to go hire somebody to do so. And the fact that there are two verses comes to teach you that you have to go through the trouble of hiring somebody in order to save them. So no matter what, if someone is in immediate danger, you have to either save them yourself or do whatever you can within your financial needs means to be able to do so. Clearly, this is a beautiful mitzvah, a laudable quality, a requirement to actively do something, even at physical inconvenience or cost. As Edmund Burke said, the only thing necessary for the triumph of the evil is for good men to do nothing. We are not allowed to stand around and do nothing. We have to step up to the plate and save others. But the natural question is, how much of a cost are we expected to endure? How far do we have to go to save somebody else? We've just commemorated Yom HaShoah, or it's this Thursday. Yad Vashem has recognized 25,000 Chassidei Umot Olam, righteous Gentiles, who protected Jews at risk to their own lives. Is this something that Jews could be required to do, even for one another by the halacha? What about organ donation? According to the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, 22 people die daily waiting for a kidney transplant. Does this verse require us to lie down on the operating table? Last week we learned the verse, V'chai behem, in Leviticus 18, and you shall live through them, from which Rabbi Akiva derives the message now made famous by flight attendants throughout the world. Put on your own oxygen mask first before helping others. Given the choice between saving yourself and someone else, your life comes first. The Gemara shares this, shares the famous case of the water. If there's two traveling on a journey far from civilization and one has a pitcher of water, if they both drink, both will die. If only one drinks, the one can reach civilization. To that, Rabbi Akiva teaches us that you're v'chai behem, that your v'chai achichim bach, that your brother shall live with you. And from this, chayecha kodmim l'chayav, that your life takes precedence over his life. Of course, water is just a very powerful metaphor. Let's imagine ourselves fleeing Nazi Germany into the unknown. I have enough money for boat passage for my 5 family members. I remain with a little bit more. If I purchase it, if I use that money for my aunt, I'll remain with nothing at all. What if I need money for a bribe at Ellis Island? What if my child gets sick along the way? Am I obligated to spend all of my money, to risk my life in that way, even in an indirect way, in order to save my aunt or to save another person? Perhaps this is what the Rambam is getting at when the Rambam reformulates this law. The law of lo ta'amod al damrei echa, do not stand idly by your neighbor's blood. He says like this, anyone who is able to save one in danger and who does not do so violates the negative commandment, do not stand idly by the blood of your fellow. Adding the word who is able, which doesn't appear in the Gemara. You have to be able. And he goes on, cites our entire Gemara, adds a couple of other scenarios. And then he says, even though one does not give lashes for these violations because they do not involve an action, right? They're negative commandments for which we usually give lashes if you violate them. Here, there's no action, so I can't actively punish you. That does not take away the gravity of this transgression. And then he goes on to cite the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Because whoever costs the life of a single soul in Israel, it's as though he destroyed an entire world. And whoever sustains a single soul, it's as if he sustained an entire world. But again, we have to understand what is that word, kol hayachol, who is able? How would we apply this situation to the situation of righteous Gentiles? After all, anyone hiding a Jew in their home would have been instantly shot. The law prohibited it. Is he able to save? An organ donor or a fleeing Jew, are they considered able to? To that, the Haggaot Maimoniot writes, on the Rambam in this place, the Yerushalmi concludes that one is even obligated to put oneself in uncertain danger. The reasoning of the Yerushalmi seems to be that the endangered person is in a case of bari, certainty. He's definitely at risk of dying, while the potential saver is in a case of doubt, shema. Perhaps his life is at risk, but it's not choosing one life over the other life. It's just there's a potential that he'll be killed. And in that case, the Haggaot Maimoniot says, you're obligated. Rav Yosef Karo cites this in his various commentaries. But when it comes time to codify the Shulchan Aruch, he omits it. Apparently, like the Rambam, he thinks that, risking one's life is not a requirement, is not considered yachol. The Radbaz, Rav David Ibn Zimra, in the 15th century, 16th century in Egypt, was asked the following question. If the ruling power said to a Jew, let me cut off one limb from which you will not die, and if you don't allow me to, I will kill your fellow Jew. Are you obligated to put your finger or your arm or your leg on the table and allow the evil king to cut it off? And then he's violating lo ta'amot, is a negative prohibition, right? Don't, how could you stand idly by your neighbor's blood? You have to save him. You have an obligation to save him. And violating a negative prohibition, theoretically, one is required to give all of his money or her money to avoid violating it. Even a positive commandment, in order to fulfill a positive commandment, you're actually obligated to spend up to 20% of your wealth in order to do it. This is actually saving a human life. As the Rambam says, it's as if you've saved an entire world, or conversely, destroyed an entire world. How are we to relate to this? Are you obligated to give up your arm? The Radbaz replies that while this is an act of great piety, midat chasidut, it cannot be required. He goes on to explain that you don't really know what you could die from. He's seen people die from scratches on their ears. You can lose blood and die from almost anything. Furthermore, it's written, Diracheha darchei noam, the Torah's ways are ways of pleasantness, which implies that the laws of our Torah must agree with common sense and logic. It's not logical, says the Radbaz, to think that a person would allow another to blind his eye or cut off his hand or foot in order to prevent the killing of his fellow. Therefore, says the Radbaz, I see no justification for this law, but only as an act of piety, midat chasidu. V'ashrei mi sheyachol la'amod bo. Happy is the person who can fulfill it. But if there's any danger of a life-threatening type, he goes on to say, such a person would be a chassid shoteh, a foolish saint. That would be prohibited. For the doubtful danger supersedes the certain danger of his fellow. So the Radbaz actually comes and says, if you might really die, you're actually prohibited from saving someone else at the risk, at the significant risk to your life. And so throughout the ages, the rabbis have been divided. Some authorities think it's permitted and even praiseworthy to endure reasonable risk to save someone else. And other authorities think it is, that it is inappropriate or that it can be, that it can't be required. Given that it's Yom HaShoah, I want to share one story, from a response of a great rabbi near whom I had the zchut of living when I was on the Lower East Side, Rav Ephraim Oshri of the Beit Midrash HaGadol. Before moving to the Lower East Side, he survived the Kovno ghetto and wrote responsa during the Nazi occupation that he buried and later dug up and published after the war. Rav Oshri and the Rosh Hashiva of Slobodka, Rav Avraham Gradinsky, witnessed the brutal arrest of many of the Bnei Yeshiva when the Nazis came to Lithuania. Rav Gradinsky asked Rav Oshri to ask a certain Rav Yitzikovich, who had a certain relationship with the Lithuanian government, to intercede on their behalf. Rav Oshri hesitated. How could he ask Rav Yitzikovich to endanger himself in that way? Rav Oshri entertains the question and comes to the conclusion that given the desperate needs of the hour on behalf of the community, it was permitted to ask. Rav Oshri was clear. Rav Yitzikovich certainly is not obligated, based on the principle of Al Ta'amod V'Chai Behem, that on the one hand he can't stand idly by his neighbors, on the other hand, Chai Behem takes precedence. But it would be that his life takes precedence. It would be praiseworthy for him to do so. And Rav Oshri relates after the war that he did so and that Hashem assisted him and Baruch Hashem brought him success. Just the same, Rav Oshri is clear. It is impossible to obligate someone to risk their life on behalf, even in the needs of the hour for the public. The Orach HaShulchan says, you don't have to risk your life, but you shouldn't measure too carefully either. There's always some sort of risk to your life. You can die crossing the street. Surely someone who jumps into the river when he sees someone drowning is taking a risk of his life, the case that's articulated in the cases in the Gemara, to, if you see someone being mauled by an animal, if you see someone drowning in a river, or being robbed by robbers, all of those cases involve a certain amount of danger. And yet we're obligated to risk our lives. You shouldn't measure too carefully, but you don't have to risk your life. How do you know how much is too much? Rashi says, Chazor al kol tzadin shelo ya'abed dam re'echa. You have to try to extinguish every opportunity. See, do the most you can. We're being taught here not to be passive, to really be honest with ourselves. What could we possibly do to save someone else in a difficult situation? To treat others' life as deeply and precious, like we would want them to treat that of ourselves or of our family. May we all merit to find the courage and the strength in both times of emergency and everyday encounters to translate the words of the Rambam, that every life is an entire world, into action. But before I end, I'd like to raise one more question. Given the upcoming holidays, Yom HaZikaron on Wednesday and Yom HaTzmaut on Thursday, and the question is as follows. If we can't obligate, as the Radbaz says, or the Shulchan says, or Rav Oshri says, we cannot obligate someone to risk their lives in order to save others, how can we as a country ever wage war? And I'm not talking just about the Roy Klein's, incredibly brave soldier who threw himself upon a grenade in order to save his fellow soldiers, or other heroes who sacrificed their lives to save citizens or their comrades in arms. The very notion of an obligatory draft and the orders of sending soldiers into battle means, tragically, that some soldiers are destined to die. How can we do that? How can we ask someone to take a risk like that? The Torah says, V'chai behem, you are to live through the mitzvahs. Chayecha kodmim, chay achich imach. Your life takes precedence over other people's. So to answer that question, I'd like to end with the psak of Rav Eliezer Waldenberg, the Tzitz Eliezer, who was a contemporary rabbi, the rabbi of Shari Tzedek, until he passed away a decade or so ago, who was asked this question. If there's a wounded soldier on the battlefield whose life is in danger, but to help him requires exposing yourself in very concrete ways to enemy fire, but not approaching him means equally concrete danger to his life, are you required or even permitted to risk your life in order to help him? What should we do when we see someone, as a soldier who sees your comrade injured on the field, on the battlefield, should we risk our lives to save them or not? And the Tzitz Eliezer, in answering this question, differentiates between the obligation of Lo Ta'amod, which is bound by the imperative of V'chai Behem, you shall live by him, and the situation of war, which sometimes is a mitzvah of its own, but is not bound by this restriction of Chai Behem. On the war and on the battlefield, there's no rule, V'chai Behem, your life takes precedence. Rather, you should apply the Rambam, as he says, Me'achar she'ikanes b'kishrei ha'milchama yishan al mikveh Yisrael moshio ve'etzara v'yasim nafsho v'chapo v'lo yira v'lo yipached v'lo yachshov lo b'ishto v'lo b'ivanav elem yimche zichronam b'libo v'yifneh mikol devar l'milchama. Once entering the war, one must rely on the hope of Israel and its Savior in times of trouble, and put his soul into God's trust. The soldier may not fear or even think of his wife and children. On the contrary, he forgets entirely about them and turns his entire attention to the war. The human life is infinitely precious, as the Rambam says, an entire world. And every individual has to simultaneously perceive the most preciousness of the other, and also protecting his or her own life first and foremost. But the existence of the nation can change that equation entirely. to move the imperative to risk one's life out of the normal bounds of the law, lo ta'amod, and into another category altogether of national defense. That is the power of the state. Creating a Jewish state creates a national obligation that is deeply, deeply painful, but also a tremendous zchut. Whereas Rav Oshri could not obligate Rav Yitzkevich to risk his life on behalf of the community, the Ramatkal, the head of the army in the state of Israel, can and he must. And the individual soldier can and he or she must. It's a very sad privilege, but a very real one. This week, we both celebrate it and mourn those who have given their lives for it. May our government and its advisors have the wisdom and the good judgment to use it carefully, effectively, and to advance peace. Have a Shabbat Shalom and a meaningful holiday.
Thank you, Rabbi Hammer Kassoy. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem. Thank you.